Blog Talk Radio.
Network. The World Transformed is an audio production of Speculist Media, and you can find us online at worldtransformed.com. This program explores a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities, which are at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. The World Transformed is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. We're not here so much to tell you about the future as we are to encourage you to think about your future and to consider what may be the biggest transformation of them all, the one that will occur in your world, in your life, the one that begins with recognizing and acting on the vast possibilities that are unfolding before you and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does that amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio, I should say the newly decked out, world transformed virtual studio, is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Better all the time, you know?
Absolutely. I know the feeling. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a good thing to get through the holiday season and to do so without too many scrapes. And so I'm grateful for that and looking forward to a fantastic 2013. I know you are as well.
I just posted on one of my blogs, what's it called, The Transparency Revolution today, that if, in fact, as we'll be exploring, the year 2012 marked the high watermark for human history, as has been contended by some, then I think there's good reason to believe 2013 is going to be even better. I think that our belief that the world is getting better all the time is being pretty well panned out. There's an awful lot of evidence to suggest that that's the case, and of course that's part of what we'll be talking about on this new program. Well, we should talk about the fact that this is a new show. This is no longer fast-forward radio, although I bet here and there we will accidentally refer to it as such. What do you think? What are the chances?
I'm going to do my very best and never say it. It's the world transformed from here on out, and you can call me on it. I tell you what, I will buy you lunch the next time I'm in Denver if I refer to this show as fast-forward radio.
Okay, sounds good. And we'll think of a suitable punishment for me, too, if I if I mess up. But what's different? Well, we've got a new site dedicated to the show. It's actually the site that we used for The World Transformed when it was a special series on Fast Forward Radio. So worldtransformed.com is going to be the home of our futuristic blogging. Basically, it'll be the home of the kinds of content that we've traditionally blogged at The Speculist. And what happens to Speculist.com? Well, it becomes the home of our vastly expanding media empire here. And the site will not go away. The name will not go away. But most of our, as I think I described it somewhere, we're moving our primary blogging operations over to worldtransformed.com, and that's going to be the home of our community. And this is going to be a show about those same topics, but with the emphasis that I referred to in our opening, an emphasis around how people, each of us, those of us performing on the show, those of us listening to the show, those of us who don't yet have any knowledge about this but are beginning to get interested in it, we're gonna start talking about how we incorporate these ideas into our lives, how we respond to them, how we begin leveraging these transformations, and what the future really holds in store for us, what it has to offer us as we move ahead, as we move deeper and deeper into this era of change. So much so that I have actually reclassified the program on Blog Talk Radio. I should note there are a couple of things that are still very much transitional about the program. We've not settled on a logo yet. I've got a new logo up on the site, so would appreciate feedback, pro or con, from those listening. If you're in the chat room, you want to let us know how you feel about our logo. We're collecting feedback on that, but that's not intended to be the final one. We've actually got professional designers working on a new logo for the site. I noticed when we changed the name of the show that Blog Talk Radio still has us on the URL blogtalkradio.com/fastforwardradio. And we could change that if we wanted to. We could change it over to the World Transform, but I don't know what happens then to all those fast forward radio shows. Do the links to them, are they no longer good? So I'm working that part out with Blog Talk Radio. So stay tuned on that little piece of it. But other than a few little transitional pieces like this, I think folks listening will find that this is going to be a somewhat different show. We have 5 years to introduce the subject matter, and now we're going to basically say, well, what do you do with all this stuff? And starting out, we're gonna begin talking about that.
Absolutely.
One major difference between the show that was Fast Forward Radio and the new show, The World Transformed, is we've taken it up a notch professionally, and we now have a producer on the program. And I am delighted to introduce our producer, Erica Valencia. Erica, say hi to everybody. You may be on mute, Erica.
Oh, hello, everyone. How are you guys?
Hey, Erica, I just want to tell you how excited we are to have you on. Thanks for being part of The World Transformed.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited. This is going to be a great year.
It is going to be a fantastic year. Erica is going to be helping us out doing a lot of the running of the board stuff that Stephen has done in the past. She's been helping me out putting show descriptions together. Erica, you've been reaching out to guests and potential guests. And one feature that we had on the program early on, back when it was the very early days of Fast Forward Radio, was taking live callers. Now that we have a dedicated producer, we will probably reintroduce that feature at some point down the road, but not tonight. So, Erica, sit tight. I know you're eager for the lines to start start lighting up and for you to start putting people on, but I think tonight we'll just go just Stephen and myself and maybe pick it up with callers next week. We'll see how it goes.
Okay, great. I'm excited.
All right. Well, we'll be talking to you, and I'm sure we'll hear from you if we start going over time or something like that.
Okay. All right, guys.
All right. Thanks, Erica. All right, Stephen, you ready to dive into this stuff?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We got some great stuff to talk about tonight. And it's stuff we have mentioned before, but we're bringing it up again with a different emphasis, as you said, Phil. Tonight we're talking about the human imperative, aren't we?
Exactly. Well, we're going to talk about the three big transformations. You know, when we did The World Transformed before, we always talked in terms of these 10 big sweeping changes, and we will be talking about all of those. And I don't have the list in front of me, but to rattle them off, they had to do with nanotechnology, with life extension, artificial intelligence, the technological singularity, existential risk, post-scarcity. I'm only up to six. What else?
You're doing better than I would have done, Phil.
The way our thinking needs to change. Did I mention the human destiny and two others that I can't think of off the top of my head? But anyway, over the last year or so, we managed to collapse those transformations down to three major big drivers. And as you mentioned, Stephen, one of them is the human imperative. We're going to spend some time talking about that this evening. We've introduced it in the past. We're also going to talk about the capability curve and the possibility explosion. I think those three basic like core drivers are what's behind everything that we see happening. And I think those are the three major transformations that people need to get their head around and need to start getting their lives around, because these are the things that are going to be changing your life for the better, ideally, in the weeks and months to come. The human imperative is a great one to start with. And we said we were going to do a three-parter on this a while back, and we've sort of bounced around that three-parter. But tonight we're going to talk about all three of these just from a slightly different standpoint, just from the standpoint of exploring a little bit about what they mean in our own lives. But in order to do that, I think we have to somewhat reintroduce them. So as you mentioned, the human imperative, that's the first one. I've talked about it numerous times in the past. Stephen, I know you have too. Basically, it comes down to everybody is improving everything all the time. That's what human beings do. They work on improving their lives. They work on improving the circumstances that they're in, trying to make things better for their families, trying to make things better for their children, trying to make things better for their communities, trying to get ahead in their own life, trying to ward off bad things from happening. But the interesting thing is, this driver behind virtually all of human existence has this remarkable additive component to it. The improvements that we are each making feed into the improvements that we're all making, and we are then able to benefit from improvements that other folks have made, and it's like we're sort of picking ourselves up by our own shoelaces, isn't it?
That's right, and it could be things at your job or just ways of doing things, you know, at home or whatever, you know. Think about growing up, Phil. I mean, did just a simple thing. Growing up, did your family ever really recycle much?
No.
You know, I mean,
no, we didn't have that concept when I was a kid, actually.
And to the extent that you recycled it, we called it garage sales. You know, that's
exactly, yeah.
That was recycling in the 70s and before. But people do now, and most people do in some way or another. That's just a small thing, but it's you put all the people that are doing it now together, it actually means something. And so, yeah, that's one small thing that and one small way we're improving.
Absolutely. It's a really good example of these kinds of improvements that work their way into our lives. We don't notice them happening. We don't think too much about them at the time they're occurring, but they add up to significant levels of change and significant levels of improvement over time. And we're going to come to another big example of that here in just a minute. But I wanted to talk briefly about the categories of improvement that people make, because it sounds a little vague when you say, well, people are, you know, everybody's always trying to make everything better, everybody's always trying to improve everything. Well, what are you talking about? What is it that people are trying to achieve? And I've got a list that I derived. It's a little bit based on the Maslow hierarchy of needs, or at least it sort of reflects it. These are the things that, as far as I can tell, anyone who works on improving anything is getting at. It starts at the most basic level. We try to ensure our own survival. We try to make sure that we're not going to die. We want to avoid death as an outcome of our day-to-day existence, basically seeking to keep our lives going, or the lives of our family or friends, those who are close to us, going. Most basic set of improvements that people try to make. If life is if our circumstances are threatening our lives, we try to mitigate that, and we try to see to it that we can continue to live. You take it one step above that, and we work on security. So it's not, even if your life isn't in danger, you want to work on avoiding any outcomes that would include physical harm or loss of property, or even loss of self-esteem, or, you know, loss of good reputation, whatever it might be, loss of wealth. We try to stay alive, and we try not to get hurt. These are kind of the caveman improvements, right? This is what our primitive ancestors had to spend a lot of time working on, basically not getting eaten, not freezing to death, not starving to death. And in fact, up until even a couple of centuries ago, survival was a much harder thing to pull off than it is today. And in fact, our descendants, a generation or so hence, will look back on this time and they will say, oh, that was a crazy dangerous time that those people lived in. Because as we continue to improve our circumstances, we're getting better and better at surviving, and we're getting better and better at not getting hurt.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
I was just going to add to that, Phil, that this is one way that we should look at the world, too, and not get puffed up too much about, you know, ourselves here in the developed world. You know, there are geniuses in Africa, and there are geniuses in other places where, you know, they are spending their time and efforts more on the survival aspect than we have to. And so, you know, that's one great reason to help the rest of the world come along and develop, is that we will begin to get those people, those geniuses that we're basically losing to just the struggle to survive. Once they get past that, they get to the further development of us all.
It's a really good point. Think of the human capital that is, I won't say wasted, but that is spent on people trying to survive, trying not to be harmed. It used to be most of the human race, and now it's still a too large percentage of the human race who have to focus all of their or the lion's share of their energies on that. And very little is left over for actually the other kinds of improvements that I'm going to get to, much less, being part of this overall improvement of the world project, which is what we all get to participate in, you know, once you've hit a certain level, you know. The example that comes to mind, we always talk about concern for the environment. You know, when did we, the United States, or when does any country ever get worried about the environment? Well, you know what? It's after they've hit a certain level of, like, economic and social development.
That's right. That's when you can afford to worry about it. That's exactly right.
Yeah. An awful lot of taking care of what's beautiful and good and important in the world is a luxury. It's something that you get to do once you've figured out how you can survive, once you figured out how you can keep yourself out of danger, once you figured out how you can keep your loved ones out of danger, then you can start working on, you know, some of these other things. How nice does your house look? How clean is the water? How well protected are the wetlands, right? Those kinds of things. When I say it's a luxury, I'm not suggesting for a minute that it's not vitally important or that it's not something that we should be doing, just that it's something that people have never had the opportunity to work on until they were able to clear these other hurdles. Until you clear those hurdles, you can't work on those things. I mean, in that sense, curing diseases is a luxury, right? Because you can't get around to doing that until you've transcended the point where you don't have to worry about starving to death. If you're concerned about starving to death, then you can't worry about developing a cure for cancer. And that's kind of the big hurdle that we clear when we go from survival and security to satisfaction, which is reducing outcomes that bring no pleasure with outcomes that do bring some pleasure. That's actually the space you start to get to play in. Happiness, seeking outcomes that provide or confirm meaning or that provide a sense of belonging. This is very important, and it's something that you can only do if you're not, you know, being eaten by predators or something like that. Then we work on to things like fulfillment, that is working on outcomes that provide a sense of purpose or achievement, and transcendence, seeking outcomes that redefine meaning and purpose. And I want to point out that from satisfaction on up, okay, that's not necessarily a scale of if you achieve this one, then you get to work on the next one. You can go straight from security to transcendence, right? I mean, you can start working on those kinds of improvements. But there is a hard line between survival and security. And Stephen, I note that one of the things you point out about happiness is that if you start working on that one, if you start working on I'm going to work on the things that make me feel good, that give me pleasure in my life and that make me happy, there's a risk associated with that, isn't there?
Absolutely. You know, we don't want to become too satisfied with the status quo. I mean, we should always be seeking further improvement. And you know, it might seem to be small improvements, but I think we need to continue to strive to seek some improvement. And if you're in a place in your life that, you know, my gosh, you know, the kids are grown, and I've helped them get their education started, and they're established, and boom, now what do I do with myself? You know, the house is paid for, this and that. Well, you know, at that point, you might think about, well, you know, what can start looking elsewhere, maybe outside of even the United States, to find problems that can be solved. You know, mentioning again the geniuses overseas. Imagine a genius woman in Haiti, how she spends her day, probably washing clothes. And there's got to be a way, you know, to help bring these countries along. And the problems seem insurmountable, but a little at a time, I think.
Well, one step at a time, and actually, it moves a little quicker than we give it credit for. I think it was Bill Gates who said that we tend to underestimate what can occur in a year. Overestimate what can occur in a year, and underestimate what can occur in a decade. And there's actually a terrific example of that in this quote that I've got from a wonderful story that was from The Spectator, and this is what I was referring to earlier, this article that makes the case that 2012 is kind of represents the high water mark for human history. A lovely idea, I have to say. Their headline was, "Why 2012 was the best year ever." And the subheading was, "Never in the history of the world has there been less hunger, less disease, and more prosperity." And if you read the article, I'll go ahead and put the link in the chat room. If you read the article, you'll see that, you know, there is a pretty good case. One of the things I noted about that article is, and in fact, I had followed it from a piece on Forbes that quoted it, and I saw the same thing happen there. The comment threads that build around pieces like this are very instructive, because it tells you how unhappy people are with the idea that that things might be going well.
Well, you know, in some ways, Phil, it's hard to blame people. You know, here we are in the United States in the midst of, either we're still in a recession, or we are in a very slow recovery, an anemic recovery. And so maybe personally, you know, most of the people who are reading this presumably are in the developed world. And so maybe personally, this year is not the best year of their life. Maybe they were doing better 2 or 3 years ago.
Right.
Maybe there's some of that. But I think there's also another thing at work, and that is just the refusal to believe. You know, it's just we're built, Phil, to see all these dangers and see how the world is going to hell. You know, that's how we're kind of built to see problems rather than to see progress. And, you know, and maybe we're the benefactors of that fact, that we're built to see problems, because then we address them, right? But every now and then, I think it's so that we don't get discouraged, I think it's a good idea to look and see how we've been successful at moving things along.
Well, I think that's a really good point. If you look at my division between the two basic kinds of improvements that we make, with safety and security on one hand, and then happiness, fulfillment, transcendence on the other side of the of that divide, you're right. I mean, we spent most of human history, and most of prehistory, most of the time that we spent evolving into human beings, focused entirely on that first couple of sets. So in order to work on those kinds of improvements, you have to have a mindset that looks for potential problems, that looks for potential threats, that is aware of threats, and that is responding to threats. And so I think it's very much human nature to assume, if not the worst, then kind of to assume the bad. If you assume the bad, you'll probably find some. And if you prevent the bad from happening, then you've done yourself a good turn. So certainly, we're not ever suggesting that bad things aren't going to happen, or that 2012 was a great year for everybody. And in fact, one of the comments on the Forbes piece was that, you know, how do you think the people in Newtown feel about 2012, right? And of course, it's true. 2012 was the worst year of a lot of people's lives. There's no question about that. You know, 2011 was too, and 2013 is going to be the worst year of a lot of people's lives, sadly enough. Terrible things have happened, are happening right now, and are going to continue to happen as long as human beings exist. I believe in an almost unimaginably optimistic future, but it's one that has that reality anchoring it, which is that there will always be terrible things happening, and there will always be cause for great unhappiness. The difference being that in the main, if you look at the whole picture, there's less and less cause for that, or at least less and less of the things that have been the cause for it in the past. So when you think about, well, you know, as a percentage, how many of us are dying of a given disease? Well, fewer, right? Just about any disease you can name. As a percentage, and this comes to the one that I've quoted over on Transparency Revolution, how many of us are poor? Well, a lot fewer. You know, that's the astounding thing. How many of us are starving to death? Fewer than have in the past. We've talked a lot about the decrease in violence, which it's hard to imagine because we have a media culture that talks about violence as though it's a constantly increasing factor. But the truth is, there's a lot less violence today than there has been in the past. So here's what I found on this piece that I found particularly gripping, because I had not heard this before, and I don't know, Stephen, if you had bumped into this fact or not. He says, take global poverty. In 1990, the UN announced Millennium Development Goals, the first of which was to halve the number of people in extreme poverty by 2015. So here it is. It's 1990. They're setting these ambitious goals for 25 years in the future. And what do they say? Well, there's this many poor people in the world, extreme poverty. We want that number to be half by 2015. Okay. Yet the achievement, it emerged this year that the target was met in 2008. Okay, so this awesome goal that the UN set for 2015, we actually achieved that goal in 2008. It's astounding. But the achievement did not merit an official announcement, presumably because it was not achieved by any government scheme, but by the pace of global capitalism. And
capitalism, it just never, it's like the redheaded stepchild among certain segments. It never gets the respect it needs.
You know, yeah, it's got a Rodney Dangerfield problem going on. It don't get no respect, right? if someone had introduced if the UN had put a program in place and had done this, there would have been massive celebrations. But I don't know how the UN went about trying to achieve the goal, but the goal got achieved. The goal got achieved 7 years ahead of schedule. Nobody celebrated because what happened? You know, if the word capitalism makes you uncomfortable, it shouldn't. But if it does, here's what happened. It happened organically. It happened naturally. It happened from the bottom up rather than top down. It happened because individual human beings were making individual choices to improve their own lives. And by doing those things, go ahead, Stephen.
The whole bottom-up way of doing things, Bill, is going to be really the rule going forward, because we are becoming more and more empowered as individuals. It's something we talked about quite a bit, that we can do more and more with less and less as far as physical technology, that, you know, big bulky computers that we had back in I had back in college, is now, you know, these little tiny things that never leave my side. You know, we do more and more. We're empowered to do things, and we're more connected than we ever were. And so the bottom up is just the way it's going to be. And, you know, it may not be really respected in some segments, but I think that's it's just going to win out of the sheer strength of the empowerment that individuals are getting.
Exactly. Basically, this story, and I'm sorry, I'm getting a message here in the chat room that there's an echo with my voice, so I'm not hearing that. Stephen, is that?
I'm not hearing it either, Phil. I'm not hearing it, but if they're hearing it, you might want to adjust your mic a little bit.
Well, Sean says it's okay now, and Jab agrees. Okay. Everyone's telling me that it's not a problem. Okay, good. See, things are getting better all the time. There's your proof right there. That's it. Thanks, everybody. Good night. This is such a powerful example of the human imperative in progress. And we've talked about the human imperative. If you're going to read one book to help you understand what that's all about, the book I would recommend is The Rational Optimist by Matt Ridley, in which a guy who has written extensively about biology, a guy who's written extensively about evolution, talks about how the development of trade was this huge evolutionary step for humanity. It's really what put us where we are. It's kind of the driver behind culture. It's the driver behind civilization, behind technology. We think that we really started heading in the right direction when we invented language, but there's a pretty good case to be made that we invented language so that we could buy and sell stuff better.
Absolutely. Once language was invented, then we were able to communicate with one another, the other person standing there, and we began building oral histories so that wisdom from this generation could be passed down to the next. Then, of course, writing allowed us to make that wisdom even more permanent. And these things just gets better all the time. And now we can communicate with one another across vast distances. And
One thing leads to another. Once you start writing things down, then you've got this accumulated knowledge, and it's exactly what we've talked about before about how improvements build on improvements. Well, knowledge builds on top of knowledge. Technology, which becomes this embedded form of knowledge, improves upon technology, and you have this just cascading effect of improvements, which makes it possible for us to be doing a program like this. And it all goes back to people wanted to, in some way, improve their lives. It goes back to the idea that I'm pretty good at catching fish, or I have access to a good fishing hole. You're pretty good at collecting animal skins. My fish won't keep me warm at night. Your animal skins are not particularly good to eat. And we suddenly make an exchange. We're both better off than we were before. That gets multiplied by the whole of the human population over time, with us getting more and more sophisticated about how we communicate these things, getting more and more sophisticated about how we embed the knowledge in our technology, in our written language, in our culture, in our civilization itself. And lo and behold, we lift ourselves out of the Neolithic state to the agrarian state, ultimately to the Industrial Revolution and to the world we have today. So it really shouldn't come as a surprise at all that people interacting with each other, trying to make their lives better, brought themselves out of poverty. It shouldn't be a surprise at all. And maybe that's as much a reason that it wasn't celebrated as anything else. We tend to take the good stuff for granted. It's a problem that we have. It's a good problem to have because we get so much good stuff and we get used to it. But it's also one of the reasons that people can't see the fact that the world is improving tremendously, because it's like, a lot of people got lifted out of poverty because of trade. Well, that's not like anything big happened. It's just more people being lifted out of poverty than have ever come out of poverty before in all of human history. It's a great story, and I suggest to everyone that you follow that link and read that and get a real feel for what's happening globally. If things aren't going so well in your corner of the world, and they might be going a little better in your corner of the world than you think they are, if you step back and apply a little bit of perspective. But even if things aren't going great for you, overall things are going pretty well for us as a species. And I think there's good reason to think that they're going to continue to go well for us, because the driver behind it is what it's always been, which is that we're working to make those things better.
It can be argued, Phil, that we've already had a singularity of sorts. Greater than human intelligence perhaps came to the planet as soon as we started, we had sufficiently advanced marketing and networks. If you think about it, the guy who, you know, mines the salt in ancient Rome, he doesn't know all the places that's going to end up, and no one does. You know, I mean, it just these marketing networks, they bring things to people that, you know, that they and cause good things to happen that are far beyond the knowledge of any one person involved in the system. It's, you know,
that's
greater than human intelligence benefiting humanity. So yeah, it has done its job lifting a lot of people out of poverty. It's got more work to do though.
So that, yeah. I think that reality that you've just articulated, Stephen, that is what we want to talk about on this program. That's one of the things that we're going to be talking about is what we need to be doing within that system. Okay. We need to be thinking about a world that works that way. For a long time, you could get by pretty well in this world assuming that things were going to stay the same, or you could be gloomy and assume that things were going to get worse. And, you know, there's no great detriment to that because things did tend to stay the same and a lot of things did get worse in a lot of people's lives, or, you know, that as you pointed out, made you prepared for the bad things to come. But we're at this inflection point now where there is so much good stuff occurring that can be taken advantage of, that to ignore that is to really cheat yourself out of a lot of potentially good things that that you could be experiencing. It's really to sell your own life short, I think, if you're not, when planning for the future, yeah, you want to be ready for a world where maybe things have changed for the worse, but what you need to expect is a world where things have changed for the better, because that's based on everything that we're seeing happening is exactly what's most likely to happen. So if your planning isn't taking that into consideration, you're probably cheating yourself.
Yeah, I agree. You know, doomsday prepping, you know, it might not be a bad idea to have some extra food around in case of an emergency, but you don't want to lose sight of the fact that things are getting better all the time. And maybe, you know, if anybody in our audience is doing some prepping, that's, you know, that's fine. But also, you know, that saves some attention for the possibility that things are going to just take off. And, you know, because you might feel like you've been left behind if all of your attention has been.
Well, again, I'll give it the old Pareto rule. I'll give it the 80-20 rule, okay? If you want to spend up to a fifth of your time, energy, resources, planning for disaster, planning for all the bad stuff that can happen, go for it, right? You know, or even a third. If you can go up to a third of your time, resources, energy. But the rest of those resources, the rest of that energy, the rest of your intellectual capital, you need to be focused on the good things that can happen, and you need to start working your life in the direction of those. There's a methodology that I call practical time travel that we'll also be talking about on this program that has to do with getting ourselves to the set of outcomes that are most beneficial to us, getting us to the outcomes that we want. And it's going to become easier and easier for us to do those things, but it's not easier if it's not part of your worldview. It's only easier to do if you've allowed yourself to imagine that things can get better, and if you've allowed yourself to start working in that direction. So, you know, going all the way back to the beginning of the show and the introduction I gave, I think in some ways the biggest transformation that has to occur is that fundamental one about the way we think and the way we look at the world. We've got to recognize the human imperative is there. We've got to recognize what it's pushing us towards. We've got to see it for the driver that it is. And then some amazing things can begin to happen. But I'll tell you what, we've spent enough time on the human imperative. I want to jump quickly on to the capability curve, closely related to the human imperative, because it derives from it. But to state it in one sentence, it is, today I could do more than I could do yesterday. And tomorrow I can do more than I can do today. It's as simple as that. We're getting better at doing things. We're becoming more enabled. We're able to leverage more resources. We're able to leverage more knowledge. Basically, the human imperative, as it operates in the background and as we all participate in it, means that we're all becoming much more capable beings. We're all becoming much more powerful beings than we were in the past. And we need to be able to start projecting that idea out. Okay? The assumption that we always have is that, well, I'm whatever you are, I'm 25 years old, and I'm able to do this many things, and I know this much. So 25 years from now, I'll be 50, or 50 years from now, I'll be 75, and my capabilities will have probably gone down somewhat. I'll be older. You know, by the time I'm old, I won't have as much money, and basically I won't be able to do as much. Not true anymore. If that was ever true for humanity, and perhaps it was, it's just not true anymore. The fact is, day to day, month to month, year to year, incredible new capabilities are opening up for all of us now. We're all able to do so much more than we could in the past, and we have to start seeing ourselves as these empowered beings that we really are. It's a real attitude shift that needs to occur, and I think it's the first thing that needs to occur before we're able to take advantage of it. The fact that we are capable of many more things is only useful once we really start to get our head around it.
Okay. Can I give an example of that?
Yeah, please.
Managing my weight has always been something I kind of had to deal with as an adult. And, you know, lately there have been some tools. I mean, obviously smartphones contribute to our lives in many, many ways. But here's just one small example. Got an app on my iPhone now that I, you know, I'm able to log my weight, log what I'm eating, monitor myself. I guess it's a small part of, you know, what quantified self is all about. And so that I can keep up with what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong so that I can, you know, better take care of myself. That's just a small thing that a capability that's with us now. And, you know, we always have our smartphones with us, and that's just something that's come along that's just a small thing. But you add all these small things up, it means something.
Well, it really does. Since we're on that particular one, wouldn't you know, right at the beginning of the year, a lot of us are thinking about these things. I have an app on my smartphone, on my iPhone, the most basic one, I think, probably for tracking, that's called WeightBot. And, you know, you just put your weight in every day. And it's really motivating because it's like, oh, geez, you know, and you get on there and you go, oh, no. And you can look at the trend line and you can say, oh, I was supposed to be here by then and now it's this month and I'm there. And it's really helpful and interactive, although it's an extremely simple piece of software. But as you say, the fact that you got it with you all the time makes it incredibly useful. The other thing that we have that – that people didn't have in the past is we just understand this so much better than we did in the past. I think there have been major breakthroughs in understanding on nutrition in my lifetime. Actually, some of them were well understood even before I was born. Some of them were well understood a century or more ago. But unfortunately, we've fallen under a lot of really unfortunate paradigms around nutrition and health and weight loss and some of those kinds of things. So ideas that were introduced
what
faddishly.
You need to do is eat more grain.
Well, you know, yeah,
You know, more grain. That's what you need. No, I don't think so. I've come to believe a different thing than that. But anyway,
I'm not a big proponent of grain eating at this point. Yeah. Although I was a pretty enthusiastic participant in it over the last few weeks, and
of it this way: when we want to fatten our cattle and fatten hogs, what do we feed them? You know. So maybe we should not eat that stuff if we're not interested in being fat, like, you know, hogs ready for slaughter. So
there you go. Certainly not in the quantities that we feed them to. Well, we've talked about the fact that it seems that something closer to the paleo diet, something closer to a low carb diet, works for an awful lot of people in terms of not just reducing weight, but improving a lot of the markers of health, warding off diabetes, warding off heart disease, some of those kinds of things. But, yeah, as I was planning what I was going to be doing after the holidays were over, I actually took two different intermittent fasting programs and fused them together along with my own kind of homemade low-carb diet that I've based on reading Gary Tobes and a few other things. And I thought about this. I was like, wow, I've got this really sophisticated weight loss program that I'm following. And I didn't pay a dietitian for it. I mean, one of them was a book I downloaded for free on Amazon. And the other one was a book I think I paid like $3.99 for on Amazon. And the other one was Gary Tobes' book, which I had bought because I was interested in the subject. But between those three things, you know, suddenly I'm putting together my own personal nutrition plan, my own personal weight loss plan that I know is going to work for me because it's based on stuff that I've already tracked a lot of progress around. And here I am implementing for myself a weight loss program that I don't think a decade or two ago I could have found a doctor who would give that to me. And certainly nobody could have given it to me to the specificity of this is what works for you. Better than I could. But this is something that I'm now capable of doing. And you take that one example of, you know, Phil's diet plan and multiply that by 10,000 areas in our lives where we are just tremendously more capable of, we're better informed, we're better equipped, and we're just more able to deal with things than we've ever been before.
Let me ask, how much did you spend on the app that you're using to track your weight?
I don't know, $2 like 5 years ago, right? I mean, it's been a good investment,
well,
that's for sure.
I think I got the app is around Christmas time as I was going, you know what, the holiday pounds are just a little bit more than they need to be. It was free, and it's perfectly suitable for everything I needed to do. You know, that's the kind of capability. And you see free software. That's what an app is, let's face it. You see it more and more doing better, and you know, greater and greater things are being done cheaper and cheaper. So
there it is. Yeah,
great world we live in.
The resources you need to take control of your life in completely new and unexpected ways, in ways that you never have before, those resources are available in ways that they've never been available before. They're there for very little money or for free. Or for a modest investment, but those resources are available, and we really have to start getting our heads around what are we going to do with the capabilities that we have now, that we're going to have. When will we be able to do things, you know, certain things? Because we know that in the past, people weren't able to do podcasts. People weren't able to watch any movie they wanted to anytime. They weren't able to access music. They weren't able to Skype people on the other side of the world and see and talk to people. I mean, we did a whole show about this a while back, about all the astounding stuff that you can do from wherever you happen to be sitting anytime you want to. Let's start projecting that out. What are we going to be able to do 10 years from now, 5 years from now, 20 years from now? What are the astounding capabilities? They won't seem astounding then, but from this side of the divide, they do look pretty astounding, that we're going to have. And whatever those are, let's start preparing for those things. Let's start getting ourselves ready. Now, I can give some examples. We know that anybody who wants to these days can record music, produce music. Anybody who wants to can do a podcast, can do a TV show. So what will the future equivalent of that be a decade from now or a couple of decades from now? How about this? Anybody who wants to can make clothing. I think we're probably just about there anyway. Anybody who wants to will be able to make a car to their own specifications, make a house, make a robot. Anybody who wants to can not only make their own movie, but they can look like a movie star or perform like a world-class athlete or musician. I think that those are all real possibilities for our futures, for our future selves. And take those ideas and multiply them out. You know, I gave the example of how I'm doing for myself what a nutritionist, a really advanced one, wouldn't have been able to do for me a couple decades ago. Think of yourself as being able to do for yourself what a cardiologist, what an oncologist wouldn't have been able to do for you, what a psychiatrist wouldn't have been able to do for you. I think you start to get a feel for how incredibly empowered we will be in the future. And those are the people that we need to become. Those are the futures for ourselves that we need to be working towards.
You know, another great example, Phil, is, you know, people that are formerly, let's say a decade or two ago, would be stuck in a particular niche in life. Okay, they you know, and the reason they're stuck is they have just enough time in the day to go to the job, the poor job that they're unhappy with, and earn the little bit of money that they earn. And by the end of the day, they're exhausted. They don't have time to, you know, go to a school to perhaps learn a trade or learn something that would allow them to improve their circumstance. You know, nowadays, thousands of college courses are available online, some free, most a lot free, and others for very low prices. You know, the credential aspect of it is still being worked out, but I have to believe that that's going to be worked out at some point. You know, with testing centers that, you know, once you've done the online work, you just go to the testing center, take a test, and then bang, you got your credential. Those possibilities are opening up and would be available to someone that formerly would be stuck. You know, you know, come home and hit the couch, and instead of turning on the TV and veg, you might flip open the laptop and go to school, you know, to find a way out. These avenues are opening up for everybody now.
And that brings us perfectly, Stephen, to the third driver, which is the possibility explosion. Not only are we constantly working on making improvements to our circumstances, and not only are those improvements adding up to better circumstances for most of us, not only are we becoming more capable and getting better at getting better, but we're just facing greater and greater possibilities each new day. Exactly as you said, suddenly people have a choice about what are they going to do with the time in their life. Well, watching TV is all very well, but yeah, you could spend a share of that time learning physics, right? Becoming an engineer, learning, name the topic, right? Because the information is out there, and if you want to educate yourself on it, it's there. If you take the human imperative and add to it the capability curve, what you have is a life that has more options. It has more alternatives. There is simply many, many more possibilities for the things that you can do, the things that you can make, what you can own, who you can meet, how you can interact with those people, who you are, and what you can be. Okay, so if we recognize the fact that we all have tremendous potential today, what we have to realize is that tomorrow we're going to have even greater potential than we do right now. That is the astounding fact that we have to get our heads around. And it flies in the face, as I've already mentioned, of how we expect the world to work. But it's truly the way the world works. And where's that going to pan out? Where's that going to lead us to? It's almost embarrassing to talk about, because you start talking in these superlatives that sound so fantastic. They won't sound so fantastic to people who've been with us for years, but to those who are unfamiliar with this kind of conversation, it sounds like you're fantasizing. It sounds like you're talking about just pure science fiction. But where it's going to lead is people who have the ability to experience anything they can imagine, who can experience things that currently they can't imagine, things that right now are beyond our ability to imagine, people who can live indefinitely. People who can effortlessly take on new skills and new knowledge, assume a completely different bodily form, as insane as that sounds, I think is a possibility that will be opening up, if not to us, then to people who live not that long after us. To breathe underwater, to fly through the air, to meet and have a conversation with yourself, to visit other worlds, and I'm going to say to visit other times, and whether we experience those things through computer modeling or whether we actually experience those things, I think is yet to be seen, but I would bet that it will be a progression from doing them in the form of computer models to actually doing them. And I'm not even scratching the surface. The range of possibilities is so vast. It's not really for Stephen, it's not for me to say, it's not for you to say. It's for each person who's listening to this program to start to figure these things out. You know, what would you like to be able to experience? What would you dream about one day being able to do? Who would you dream about being? Those possibilities are open in a way that most of us don't realize, in a way that the world doesn't realize. And the time has come that we have to start embracing those possibilities, because they are very real possibilities. They're not just wishful thinking. It's not fantasy. The reality is that if not us, people who live soon after us, and I happen to think that many of us, many of those in the sound of my voice are going to live for a very long time indeed, are going to be capable of doing things that human beings have never been capable of doing before, experiencing things that human beings have never been able to experience before, and live lives that are beyond the imagination of any generation that came before, and that are beyond our imagination too. And that is what we're going to be exploring on The World Transformed.
In answer to your question, Phil, what would I want to be?
Yes,
how about,
please tell us.
How about a family man version of Tony Stark?
There you go.
There you go.
Well,
a sexy immortal billionaire with superpowers.
With superpowers. You know, if I, Stephen, how much would that be worth to you if I told you that I think we could set you up with that, wouldn't you?
Well, more than the $1 billion that I would be once I'm a billionaire. You know, I mean,
exactly right. Yeah, I think that those kinds of capabilities lie within our
our
possibility paths. They're within our possibility space, and we've got that to look forward to in our future. So that's what we're going to be exploring. Say again. I'm sorry.
I think Erica just informed us we've got 1 minute left. So.
Oh, okay. So we're down to the final minute. That's what we're going to be talking about on the program. We're going to be talking about it amongst ourselves. We're going to be talking about it with some really exciting guests. And before I ask you what our music is this evening, Stephen, something I meant to say right at the very beginning, we're very pleased that we are featuring at the beginning of the program music by our good friend Jean-Sébastien B. Muse. The track is actually entitled Cosmic Monk, but we have co-opted it as theme from The World Transformed. Jean-Sébastien, of course, is the founder of the Singularity Network, in addition to being a talented musician and composer. And we're really happy to be using that music again, and he's graciously given us permission to use it for our program. So thank you so much, Jean-Sébastien, for that. And, Stephen, what is our closing music this evening?
Well, I'm going to toss this to Erica, our producer now, because she's going to be responsible for this going forward.
All right. Erica, what's our music this evening?
Okay, so it's called Everything Changes by Adrina Thorpe.
All right, Everything Changes by Adrina Thorpe. What a perfect title, Stephen, to kick off The World Transformed.
Absolutely.
All right, well, thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Erica, for all that you've done here for us this evening. Thank you all for listening to The World Transformed. We'll be back again next week with a brand new program at the regular time. Look forward to being with you all then. And until next time, live to see it.